Hey there, it's Lars. Thanks for checking out the Lars Larson podcasting experience, and have a fantastic day.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and I'm glad to have you join us for Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for America. Will the latest rendition of the health care bill from the Republicans released just today make the changes needed to gain enough votes to pass in the Senate? You know, these guys who had 5 years to practice this and they can't get these things straight, I'll tell you what, my regard for the Republican Party and some of its members on Capitol Hill goes down almost daily. A U.S. doctor was given the green light to evaluate a terminally ill baby that we've talked about on the show before, Charlie Gard, that the U.K. government gave up on. Will baby Charlie be saved? We've got a couple of thoughts on that as well. An Italian company has been approved to drill for oil. You might be a bit surprised to find out where they're drilling for oil. And one illegal alien is in jail after killing his passengers in a drunk driving accident. And it's not the first time he's come to the United States illegally. And it's not the first, second, or third time that he's been kicked out of the United States as well. We'll give you the details on that. Will Donald Trump stand up for intellectual property rights? My friend Seton Motley, the president of Less Government, joins me later on to explain the repercussions of letting intellectual property rights slide in America. And I want you to cast a vote in my quick poll at LarsLarson.com. You'll find it on the website. Should it be illegal to walk and text on busy public streets? There's some new information out, but it's not going to surprise you that an awful lot of people text and walk or talk and walk or view the internet and listen to music and walk at the same time. And I bet this has happened in your community. You're hearing about more and more pedestrian accidents where the pedestrian who gets hit by an automobile is occupied by their cell phone or other electronic device. And in most states now, it is either illegal or it is a violation of the law to drive an automobile while talking on the phone, texting on the phone, looking at the internet. Heck, in my home state of Washington, they just made it illegal to have that phone in your hand in any way, shape, or form, even to use it as a navigation device. Now, I'm not crazy about passing laws, but I want to know what you think about this. A survey that was done by an insurance company called PIMCO found that 40% of people who text and walk at the same time believe that they are distracted by that. Only 40%. Apparently, the other 60% think they're capable of texting on their cell phone. You know, that look you see when you're driving down the street and you see somebody walking down the street with their screen held in front of them, often with earbuds in their ears, and they've got both thumbs at work sending a message. Now, they think they can do that and walk down a busy street at the same time. There is, of course, the chance that they'll step in a pothole or bump into somebody. But if they happen to walk out in front of you, the driver, what do you think is the chance that they might get hurt because they don't have the first clue that you're there? And I drive through busy city streets every day on my way to work and from work. Usually in the evening when I'm driving home, there are lots and lots of people on the street. And I've literally pulled up to pedestrian crosswalks, not where there's a stop sign, but when there's a crosswalk. And I've watched young men and young women, most of them young, who walk right across in front of you and they never look up to see if there's a threat nearby, like the bumper of a car or a truck. And I always think to myself, that person is lucky that they're in front of me because I'm watching for them. But if you have a slightly inattentive driver or a driver who thinks as a pedestrian is walking up to the corner, of course they're going to stop. They see the car coming down the street. And check your local statutes. Yes, you are supposed to give way to pedestrians, but the laws in most states also say it is the pedestrian's job not to step out into the path of a car. So it's a mutual responsibility. I don't really want to suggest a law against texting and walking, But I think texting and walking is stupid. It's impolite to the people around you, and it's potentially deadly. So what do you do about a problem like that? Should it be illegal to walk and text on busy public streets? Our quick poll is found at LarsLarson.com and is brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. It has the kind of conservative values I believe in. Would you like to join the way I did years ago? Just go to amac.us, not .com. You can call 888-262-2006. AMAC is better, better for you and better for America. And about that new health care bill. At this point, I have resigned myself that there are not votes there to fully repeal Obamacare. But I believe that if we do not see the Republicans do something to start taking apart Obamacare now, that we are never going to see it happen, that at best they'll be operating along the margins. Well, the new bill that was unveiled today includes a version of an amendment from Senators Ted Cruz of Texas and Mike Lee from Utah that has become a sticking point. The amendment would allow insurers to sell plans that do not meet Obamacare regulations if they also sell a plan that does meet those rules. Well, who would object to that? I mean, after all, the biggest objection to Obamacare was it was the government ordering you to buy insurance whether you wanted to or not, and you didn't have a choice. If you don't want to buy car insurance, don't buy a car. But if you don't want to buy health insurance under Obamacare, it's either pay the fine or buy the insurance. Who would object to a plan that says, we'd like you to be able to offer a bare-bones plan that will meet the needs of many American families as long as you offer the other kind of plan? Now, I understand that the companies understand that there aren't going to be a whole lot of people who take up the opportunity to buy the more expensive plan. Most people are going to buy the kind of insurance that fits their fiscal situation. And for most people, that doesn't mean buying the most expensive plan out there. Not at all. So, here's my question for you. Do you think that we could be satisfied, at least this year, with getting something done about Obamacare? Get rid of the individual mandate. Get rid of the corporate mandate. Get rid of the mandates that say what has to be in the plan. Allow Americans to buy a health insurance package that actually fits their needs. If we could get that much done this year with the idea that this is not going to be the end of the story, but we are still long short of Obamacare repeal, would that be enough? I think it should be. And I think if we don't get something done now, we're not going to ever get anything done at all. Oh, by the way, in San Francisco, the public agency called BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, they are trying to withhold surveillance video on the trains because there have been three robberies on BART trains that involve groups of teenagers. Now, here's what the BART spokeswoman says. To release these videos would create a high level of racially insensitive commentary toward the district. In addition, it would create a racial bias in the riders against minorities on the trains. Can you read between the lines on that one? BART is saying that they have video of gangs of teenagers who are apparently people of color. They may be black, they may be Hispanic, they may be Asian, we don't know. But they're saying if we tell the public that these gangs of teenagers are all, well, members of racial minority groups, that somehow that's going to create racial bias. No, it's going to be telling the public what's actually going on. And what's wrong with being transparent about that? If you have gangs of teenagers that are doing this, do you think that the riders on that train have a right to know where the potential threats are coming from? If that puts people a little bit more on guard when they see a group or a gang of teenagers that happen to be members of a racial minority group, is that something the riding public has a right to know? I think they do. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every night at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Coming up, the baby the United Kingdom doesn't want to save, Charlie Gard, might just get saved after all. We'll talk about that next on The Lars Larson Show.
The conversation continues at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the program. We'll get back to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. You've heard me over the last several weeks mentioning Charlie Gard. The baby, 11 months old or so, has a terrible medical situation. And according to the United Kingdom and its doctors and its government and the crown, there is no hope. So we just pull the plug and let the baby die. The parents, meantime, have made an appeal to the public and raised about, I think it's $1.7 million to seek medical care for their child in a more friendly country like the United States, where doctors say we might be able to do some good for Charlie Gard. And then the British court said, no, you don't. We're going to unplug the baby here. John Zmirak, the senior editor at The Stream. John, did I miss anything there?
Well, just one thing. The treatment, it's just some pills. This is not some painful operation that could increase the baby's suffering. This is not some crackpot thing like psychic surgery in the Philippines. It's some pills. They could send the pills to Britain and give the baby the pills in his own hospital room.
And why do the British doctors and the British government object to that?
Because it might work.
And then they'd have to give it to every little baby that has that situation, right?
No, that's not even the case. No, that's not. No, it's an expensive treatment, and if this were just a matter of the British National Health Service not paying for it, and the parents hadn't raised the money, this would not be an international case. The parents raised the money. I think this is a case of two things. First of all, the British medical authorities and the courts have said that saving Charlie's life would be of no benefit to Charlie because he's brain damaged. So what this is it's all just euthanasia. They want to euthanize a baby because he has brain damage. By denying him this treatment, which is paid for, they are effectively committing euthanasia. They're going to cut off his ventilator, and they're going to cut off his food and water. It's just like what happened to Terry Schiavo.
Well, and it leads you to believe that if that's the approach they take to Charlie Gard, what's the approach they're likely to take to an elderly person who's in a nursing home and perhaps isn't as fully functioning as you and me today? What's the answer for them? There's not much use to their life, so we pull the support from them as well.
And handicapped babies. I mean, euthanasia is spreading like the plague in Europe. It's already one of the leading causes of death in Belgium and in the Netherlands. They're doing euthanasia on people who aren't even terminally ill just because they're clinically depressed. Oh, you suffer from depression and suicidal thoughts. We can cure that by killing you. This is the culture of death that Pope John Paul II warned about. It began with abortion. It spread to euthanasia. It will keep spreading.
You know what frustrates me, and among other things that frustrate me about this, John, is I was thinking the other night, not to think unkind thoughts about Charlie Gard, but if little Charlie Gard had instead been a toddler who had fallen down a well somewhere and was trapped at the bottom of a well, you would see every network in America, and probably most of those from the rest of the world, gathered around that well with cameras 24 hours a day, monitoring the situation and reporting back. We've seen it happen before. We've seen it happen with adults who are trapped in mines. We've seen it happen to little kids who are trapped in water wells, which is why I think of that. And they'd be all focused on it, demanding to know, what are you going to do to get down there and rescue little Charlie Gard? But Charlie Gard didn't fall down a water well. He fell into a medical condition. And I don't, frankly, at the end of the day, understand the difference, other than, as you say, the fact that the doctors say, well, his brain is not fully functioning, so therefore there's not much use in trying to save him.
You know what's even worse? If this were an 8-year-old child in Canada who was mentally, emotionally confused and wanted a sex change, wanted hormones to block his puberty, and the parents wouldn't do it, the government would come take the child away. We know because that just happened in Canada. So parents can't save their child's life. They can't stop their child from being subjected to bizarre and dangerous hormonal experimentation. Parents are losing the most basic fundamental rights of looking over their children. Already, little girls, 12-year-old girls, get explicit sex education without their parents' consent and are able to get abortions without their parents' knowledge. They can't get tattoos. They can't get their ears pierced. But they can get abortions, and they can get gender-transforming hormones. And the common thread is the government taking rights away from the parents the government, Leviathan, knows best.
John Zmirek is a senior editor of The Stream. So, John, you wrote a fairly critical piece in which you compared the European Union to the old Soviet Union. Explain that comparison.
Well, the European Court of Human Rights isn't part of the European Union, but the European Union is constantly strong-arming countries like Poland and Ireland to legalize abortion. It's stepping on parental rights. Like in Germany, they took a child away from his parents because they were homeschooling the child. They put the girl in a psychiatric asylum in another city without telling the parents, and the European Union signed off on it. So the European Union is part of the assault on the rights of parents. It's also assaulting the rights of nations like Ireland and Poland to control their own abortion and immigration policies. It's all part of taking power away from the grassroots and concentrating in the hands of bureaucrats who make decisions at our expense because they know better. And that's why they despised us for voting for Donald Trump. They despised the English who voted for Brexit. Again, it's the little people getting up on their hind legs and acting like they have rights. And these elites, I call them the citizens of international business class, these followers of George Soros, globalism, they want to control centralized power in the hands of unelected, non-removable elites and experts, and let the rest of us deplorables just walk around like passive sheep.
All right, John, that's your point of view, and I happen to share your point of view. But what's happening in the British public? Are they having the same reaction to this that a lot of American conservatives are having from a distance?
I think they're split. There's a fair amount of resentment among the socialist-minded British that they don't even think people should be able to get private treatments outside the National Health Service. So I think that's part of it. This is an example of where they resent it when rich people fly to America for surgery. And in this case, they resent that a bunch of Americans are stepping up to pay for a treatment that their NHS won't pay for. But it does highlight for us just what will happen if we end up with a single-payer health plan, which is what I think Obamacare was always intended to lead to anyway. I think Obamacare was built to fail, to collapse, so that the Democrats could then say, well, look, there's a national crisis. We need a single-payer system just like Canada and Britain.
So they're willing to not only throw themselves into this and say put themselves at the mercy of their own government and whatever some, you know, bureaucrat down at a British bureau has to say about what they're allowed to have and what they're not allowed to have, but they resent the idea that anybody is bucking the system.
Well, right, because that's privilege. That's not equal. And this insane, exaggerated obsession with equality, it seems to be the only value from Western culture that the left has held on to. They've thrown away liberty. They've thrown away Western civilization. They've thrown away the idea of patriotism. The only thing they're clinging to is equality. It's become a false god. It's become the Moloch of the left.
Boy, I got to tell you something, John. Maybe it's the fact that I'm an American and I live in a country that freed itself from the British monarchy. But for a bunch of people who still love their royal family, to talk about equality seems really strangely ironic. John, thanks for the work you do at The Stream, and we appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you. God bless.
You bet. John Zmirak, the senior editor at The Stream. Now, your phone calls and emails. Do you think those parents have a right to seek medical treatment for their child if they've persuaded generous donors to give the money to make it happen? We've got a lot more things to talk about tonight as well. Glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277.
The Lars Larson Show. Got something to say? Call 866-HEY-LARS to join the conversation now.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Al suggests that I should know, and I did not know, that anytime I talk about British bureaucrats, the overall term is Whitehall. But see, if I use that term, I'm not sure anybody would understand. When we say the Pentagon did this or the Department of Justice did that, Whitehall, a little less familiar to most Americans, certainly to me. Glad to be with you. If you want to jump in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. Let's go to Patrick in Martinsville, Virginia. Patrick, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well for a Thursday night and ready for First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Well, I just want to chime in on the conversation from the spokesperson for BART. about not wanting to release the video because they're afraid that's going to cause, you know, some discrimination about these groups of teens that are, you know, causing problems on this public transportation, robbing people and stuff. I think, honestly, I think it's ridiculous that we have to put the safety of the American people or anybody on any public transportation system in second place to being afraid to offend somebody. I mean, I'm Caucasian, and if there were groups of Caucasian teens on public transportation that I ride every day causing problems, I would want to know about it, regardless of what color or race they are. I mean, it's a matter of public safety. You know, everybody's so, you know, worried about, you know, offending people. You know, it just, to me, it's ridiculous that you put that ahead of people's safety.
Well, I'm with you, and I'll tell you something, Patrick. You know, over the years, we've talked about serial killers now and then when there happens to be a notable serial killer in America, because they're not that common. But you know that when we talk about serial killers, we're almost exclusively talking about white men between the ages of about 20 and 50. There are a few notable exceptions, like Eileen Wuornos. But for the most part, they're white men. Should we say that it's racially offensive to describe serial killers because you almost always are describing a white male?
No. I mean, it wouldn't matter to me if it was, you know, a white serial killer or a Chinese serial killer. I mean, I would want to be warned about any of them. You know, I just, you know, to me, it's just, you know, this country in the last 8 years has gone so, you know, racially backwards. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I like everybody. It doesn't matter to me what color you are. And I mean, I deal on a daily basis with several different types of races. You know, I'm a delivery driver for a company. I deliver to convenience stores, and probably 85% of the ones that I deliver to are owned by people from India. Do I discriminate against them? No, I do not, because I feel like they're the same as us. They're just trying to make us a better life for themselves. But
I'm with you, though. I think this literally puts the public in danger, because if there's a way for BART to help people spot when there might be a threat to riders on a train, if they've had three robberies that all involve gangs of teenagers and all involve gangs of teenagers that are Asian or Black or Hispanic, I think telling members of the public that would help them to identify if they think there's about to be one of those attacks carried out. Patrick, keep up the good work, and thanks for the call. Let's go to Tasha, who heard me talking about texting while walking. Tasha, welcome to the program.
Hi, Lars. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe I'm talking to you.
Well, you're so sweet. What's on your mind tonight, ma'am?
Well, I drive around all day delivering pizzas, so I learned so much about the world through you, I just want to say. But I want to touch on the talking and texting. You know, a number of years ago, I was myself, it is dangerous. I was walking down the street. I had my earphones in listening to music while I was texting, and it was back when I smoked. I happened to drop a cigarette. I bent down to pick up my cigarette, and right when I was standing up, boom, the Max went by in front of me. Now, if I wouldn't have dropped my cigarette, I would have been smashed by that Max. So
ouch.
I wouldn't have heard it. I wasn't looking. So I'm agreeing it's very dangerous.
But do you want, I'm one of those guys who would do almost anything not to have more rules in society, or maybe to do what Trump is doing, which is every time you want to adopt a new rule because you think it'll help people or make people safer, get rid of two other rules that you don't need. So I don't want to write new rules, but what do we do when people, and I hate to say this, but Tasha, an awful lot of these people who are texting and walking seem to me, by my observation, to be younger people. And it's both young men and young women walking down the street, usually with earbuds in their ears, and they got their face right up to that screen, and their attention is focused entirely on that screen. And I just think some of those young people are going to end up dead or hurt. And I don't necessarily want to make a rule where the cops run around writing tickets to people for texting while walking. But if it's dangerous to operate an automobile And I told this to one of my producers, who is a younger guy, Ben. And he said, well, he says, but the only person who gets hurt when you're texting while walking, if you step out in front of a car, is going to be the person who's texting while walking. I said, unless the automobile driver, in an effort to save the life of the inattentive pedestrian, dodges out of the way, like you, while you're driving down the street, going through a green light to deliver a pizza. And along comes somebody not paying any attention because they got their face buried in their cell phone screen. They step out in front of you, the delivery driver, and you swerve to the left to try to avoid hitting them, and you hit somebody else.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just wanted to say real quick, too, I myself am an addict. I've been in recovery for a little over 2 years now.
Congratulations.
So I just wanted to touch on the it being a misdemeanor. You know, I went through a program a number of years ago where they told me, hey, you go through this program, you get clean, you graduate, we will drop the felony when you pay these fines. So I went through the program. It took me a long time to get through because I realized eventually I had to get clean to get through it. I finished the program, graduated, but they never did drop my felonies because I never paid my fines.
Uh-oh.
Well, it was faking it to make it, to be honest, Lars. I kept using after that, right? And so now I finally did find recovery, and I've gotten clean, and I have a good life now, and I make money, and I've got my license. I do all that. But I'm just saying, if it was, you know, if it was a misdemeanor, still, you know, I don't know if I, you know what I mean? I don't think it's a good idea to make it a misdemeanor. I mean, you know what I mean? You have to really want to get clean for any of that to work. You know what I'm saying?
But I know what you're saying.
If it was a misdemeanor, I don't think it, you know, I was afraid of getting more felonies. I wanted to have a better life, so I quit, you know?
Well, congratulations to you for getting the better life. And that's the argument I was making, is that, you know, with a number of places trying to consider legalization of heroin, the state of Oregon just finished decriminalizing heroin. So now we've made pot legal. Heroin is decriminalized, which means the next step will be making it fully legal. And then they'll do meth and cocaine. And can you imagine this society with people high on cocaine, high on heroin, scratching their arms and, you know, trying to get the imaginary bugs
absolutely
off
not.
From
methamphetamine. I come from that world. I come from that world, Lars, and my life is so much better now. And I know all the criminal activities. I mean, I was a prostitute. I was on the streets. I was all that. And I will never do that again. I have such a great life now. I just did delivering pizza, driving around, listening to you, learning about the world.
Oh,
it's
you're
more
so
fulfilling
sweet.
To me, you know what I mean? But, yeah, absolutely not. It would be a dangerous, awful society would go downhill. I truly agree.
Tasha, congratulations to you, and thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. By the way, what's on your summer travel list? Is it wallet, phone, ID, keys, and, of course, your Harry's razor? I'll tell you what, every once in a while, I used to forget my razor. Now I've got two of them. So when I go on the road, I take Harry's with me. And Harry's can go with you as well. And they've got a great travel set. And it's perfect. It has everything you need in it to give you a great shave every single day. I've been buying Harry's razors for years. They take a little less profit. They sell directly to their customers. And they're so confident you'll love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. Just cover the cost of shipping. To get this great deal, all you've got to do is go to Harry's.com. That's Harry's.com/Lars. You get the great deal. You get the great discount. You get 5 precision-engineered blades and the great razor handle. Harry's.com. Save some money and start getting a great shave today. Back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars Larson. Your dog in the fight.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I'll get back to your calls in a moment. Joining me now is our good friend Seton Motley, who's now a whole year older after his birthday this week, the president of Less Government and an all-around good guy. How are you, Seton?
Well, technically speaking, I'm just a day older.
Oh, okay.
The number changed, but yes.
Yeah, the number did change, but congratulations and a belated happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
In honor of your birthday, the entire crowd of net neutrality folks decided to stage a giant nationwide protest.
Yeah. As a guy who works at home and doesn't have to go into D.C. very often, I had to go into D.C. on my birthday to deal with these morons. Yes. They called it a day of action. I called it a day of traction, because if they keep the regulations in place that they want, the Internet will stop moving. What they want to do, of course, is they're protesting the Donald Trump administration coming in and appointing a guy as chairman of the Federal Communications Commission that is going to undo the Obama administration power grab of imposing 1934 monopoly landline phone line law on the internet, which makes no sense from a logistics standpoint, from a regulatory standpoint, and it's not even legal. You're not supposed to do that via a bureaucratic agency. You're supposed to do that via Congress. So it's bad policy, and it's bad process. So the left organized a thing led by a guy named Evan Greer, who is a freak show. He calls himself a queer workshop something or other. He plays music, protest music, and he's a community organizer wannabe. And he leads this group called Fight for the Future. And Amazon dumped millions on him. Google and Facebook weren't as involved this time, but they have been in the past. And just, oh, by the way, Evan Greer loves terrorists. He spent nearly 3 years of his life trying to get an ISIS collaborator out of jail. So he's a great guy. And I don't know why anyone in Silicon Valley will interact with him, but they are. I'm giving him lots of money. And so they just had this day of action, and of course it looked a little bigger than it actually was, because a lot of the major companies, the web companies, were involved. You know, if you went on Twitter and typed in net neutrality as a hashtag, they gave you that little spinning thing that you get when the internet's not loading quickly.
Right.
And that popped up every time you used the hashtag. And Facebook was involved, and Netflix was involved. And what it is for those companies, it's a crony giveaway. They don't have to, you know, net neutrality outlaws them being charged for all the bandwidth they use. And as you can probably guess, Amazon and Facebook and Netflix and Twitter use a lot of bandwidth. So they want to keep that in place because it's a great deal for them. And it's worth millions for Evan Greer and his freak show, because it saves them, I mean, how many billions? Just to put it in perspective, Google owns YouTube, and Netflix, of course, does streaming video. Nothing eats up more bandwidth than streaming video. And between Netflix and YouTube, that's over half the bandwidth use in the United States. So, yeah, they'll kick them some money because they save an awful lot with net neutrality in place.
You know, I got to ask you, I had a few people calling because I brought up the topic earlier this week. And I had folks saying, well, but we have to have the government involved because I don't have any extra choices. And I told them, I said, you want to see lack of choice? Take a look at Obamacare. The government got involved in health insurance, and 44% of American counties have either one or no health insurance.
Right.
So I said, if you want that same crowd of people running the internet, but let me ask you something about that. If we keep a truly free marketplace, we should have a multiplicity of different internet service providers, shouldn't we? And people said, oh, no, because there are just a few companies, like they'll name Comcast and others. I have no particular beef with Comcast. But if I understand the system right, if you and I wanted to make the Motley and Larson, you know, ISP, we could go in and buy bandwidth. And then and then repackage it and sell it. And people said, well, you can't make a profit at that. And I said, well, of course you can. That's what America does. You know, you take a Mustang and you hand it to Shelby, and you have a Mustang Shelby that sells for twice as much money. There's plenty of buying something at market price and then reselling it in a way that meets the particular needs of your clients.
One of my favorite cars I ever had was a custom, it was a 1981 Toyota Celica GT 5-speed, and then a company called Griffith bought it aftermarket and cut the top off. And no one, I got stopped, every time I stopped at a stoplight, I was like, what is that? That is such, no one knew what it was, because it was such a, you know, so yeah, they can, yeah. And
that's
let me
how
say,
you add,
I paid a little more for it, I mean, I bought it used.
No, but that's
but
how you add value, right?
Oh, it was fantastic. The roof, the top of the roof had four latches. You put it in a sleeve and put it in the trunk. It was awesome. It looked like the Journey Escape car from the album, if you remember Journey Escape for all us old people. But anyway, yeah, you can do that. And see, what people don't understand, this is very important. The problem with lack of choice at the local level isn't the companies, it's the local governments. You go into a town and you say, I want to provide broadband here. And then the shakedown begins. And they say, you have to give the government free internet. You have to give the government free TV. You have to give the government free phones. You have to build this park over here. We charge you a pole attachment fee every month, even though you only attach once. We charge you a right-of-way fee every month. It sometimes doubles the cost of build-out. And then after this giant shakedown, they go, but we'll make you a monopoly. So I'm telling you, if the companies had a choice, they wouldn't pay the shakedown, and they'd have competitors in their marketplace. And several states, like Texas, have passed what's called franchise reform. You go to the Capitol, you go to Austin, you say, I want to provide service in the entire state. The Austin says, okay, you're good to go. And then the shakedowns don't happen in Dallas and Houston. A little town like Corpus Christi has like four providers because they don't have to go through the shakedown with the Corpus Christi City Council. So when they blame the companies for the lack of choice, it's not their fault, and it's not their druthers if they had their druthers.
No, and what you're saying to me is if you want to worry about lack of choice, government is the driver of lack of choice. The free market is the driver of choice, where you say, you want a cell phone that costs $15? Go to Walmart. You can buy one. You want to spend, $1,000 on a cell phone? Go buy the top of the line, all the bells and whistles iPhone.
Sure.
And you can buy anything in between, but only because the government has largely been kept out of that. Can you imagine if you had the Obamacare version of the cell phone? Well, yes, all cell phones must contain all the features of every phone, whether you want them or not. And by the way, every American is required to buy one.
That's exactly right. And you reminded me of if the government did cars, it's the old Reagan joke about Russia.
Yeah.
Where he went in and he put his money down. You have to pay in advance. You get your car in 10 years. And the bureaucrat says, well, come pick up your car in 10 years. And the guy goes, morning or afternoon? He goes, 10 years from now, what difference does it make? He goes, well, the plumber's coming in the morning.
Seton, it is a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks so very much.
Thank you very much.
Seton Motley, the president of Less Government, and happy birthday to Seton. Glad to get your emails. You can send those to me directly, talk@LarsLarson.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @LarsLarsonShow and on Facebook @TheLarsLarsonShow.